Hello, everyone. It's Rich. Happy New Year. Many years ago, I was walking around the lot of a new car dealership, daydreaming about driving a new set of wheels. Before I could fully play out the fantasy in my mind, I noticed out of the corner of my eye a salesperson on the horizon. Yep, she spotted me and began making a beeline for my position.
Hello there.
I'll spare you the banter, but you know how these encounters typically go. I had no intention of buying a car that day, but I was definitely interested in seeing how the process would play out. Eventually, I followed her into the showroom and took a seat at her desk. I gave her the details of what I was looking for and was simply waiting for a quote. She seemed a little frantic, but I figured that was just a byproduct of the hectic environment. I mean, the place was hopping. After a few minutes, she hands me a contract with pricing. I said, "Thank you very much. I'm not ready to make a purchase today, but I do appreciate your time. I'll be leaving now." As I stand up, I kid you not, she springs out of her chair and exclaims, "You can't leave yet." I asked, "Well, why not?" She replied, "Nobody can leave until they meet my sales manager." With a growing smirk on my face, I inquired, "I'm not allowed to leave?" This time she raised her voice a little more and said, "This is our rule. You must remain here until you meet my sales manager." I laughed. At this point, her gestures were becoming erratic, and others inside the building were starting to stare. It was embarrassing. I told her, "Kidnapping is a crime," and I started walking toward the exit. She followed me all the way outside while continuing to blurt out numerous pleas to turn around. I did receive a phone call from the sales manager the following day, and I told him exactly what happened. He said she was new and acknowledged they had received complaints from other customers, but for me, I had lost confidence in their business ethics. I thanked him for his time and hung up. I think we all have a good dealership story to tell. Unfortunately, as you will hear later in this episode, I have many. If there is one recurring theme on this podcast that we can all learn from, it's that scams are prevalent and they come in all shapes and sizes. In this episode, we take a look at the new crime trend of cyber kidnapping. According to cybersecurity expert Joseph Steinberg, cyber kidnappings typically involve criminals calling or messaging a victim to trick them into thinking a loved one has been kidnapped, even though the person is actually safe. Victims have reported hearing screaming on the phone while the perpetrator claims their loved one is in danger, all to secure a ransom. Marie Helen Maras, the director of the Center for Cybercrime Studies at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, says, "They will do anything to keep you on the phone. They'll threaten to cause harm if you hang up or if you try to contact anyone, to frighten their targets into making rushed decisions." Experts are concerned that advances in technology have made cyber kidnapping easier to commit. One growing worry centers on the use of artificial intelligence to impersonate loved ones' voices and coerce them into paying ransoms. And of course, our good old friend social media, the ultimate champion of privacy. Yes, insert tongue-in-cheek emoji. Well, social media allows perpetrators to study and collect information on victims before they make contact, allowing them to gain valuable insight on an individual's life. So as we've said countless times on this show, be careful what you're sharing online. And while cyber kidnapping crimes are leading to larger payouts, the perpetrators are rarely caught. This is our first installment of a new Privacy Files true crime series, underscoring the inherent risks of a world where privacy is sold to the highest bidder. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating privacy solutions into their software. And please check out our newest offering, MySudo VPN, now available in the App Store and Play Store, a consumer VPN that is actually private. Well, here we are. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And we are, for the first time, doing something a little bit different here. We got a panel, and we're going to be talking about something in the area of true crime. privacy style, I guess, if you want. We've got Chrisula.
Hello.
Maddie.
Hello.
And Michelle.
Hi.
Are you ready?
Yep, we're ready.
All right, let's try this. So this comes from NBC News, January 2nd, which at recording time is just a couple of days ago. I'm going to read a little bit of the story, and at any point, interject, stop, talk about this, and let's see if you would catch something at some point in time and figure out, hey, this is a scam, right? Because I think a lot of times what we see out there is people get led along, maybe too trusting, maybe you're not really thinking, keeping their presence, situational awareness, and then they get sucked into a situation where they lose a lot of money or possibly become in danger of physical harm. All right, let's try this. A Chinese foreign exchange student in Utah was found alone, very cold and scared, in a tent in the mountains in frigid temperatures after his parents abroad were extorted and threatened with his safety in a cyber kidnapping, according to officials.
Wait, so you're saying the parents were contacted by these people?
I've never heard of the term cyber kidnapping.
Me neither. So I think that's why I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
We're going to learn more about this, right?
Okay.
So they're saying parents were abroad, they were extorted and threatened with his safety.
Where did the story take place?
So this is in Utah.
Okay.
So we're in January, wintertime. It's cold outside. Imagine camping this time of year.
Yeah, that'd be freezing.
The parents, I'm probably going to butcher this name, Kaizang 17. The parents of Kaizang 17 was sent a photograph that allegedly showed him abducted and received continuous threats from kidnappers, and they sent $80,000 to bank accounts in China as a ransom, according to the Riverdale Police Department in Utah.
Wow. So his family paid $80,000?
Sounds like it, yeah.
Oh my gosh, tell the story.
Okay.
I need to hear it.
The parents notified Kai's high school, which then contacted Riverdale Police on December 28th. Police spoke with Kai's host family in Riverdale, and they were unaware he was missing. They said he was home the night prior.
They didn't know he was missing?
Yeah. What are you trying to say? Kind of an obvious detail.
Wait, so you said he was abroad, but he's...
He had a host family.
A host family? So is he like a foreign exchange student?
Yes, he's an exchange student.
Okay.
Yes, so they were unaware that he was missing. They said he was home the night prior and had heard him in the early morning hours of December 28th, but there was no evidence suggesting he was forcibly taken from the home. Where do you think this is going?
Cyber kidnapping. I'm like, he's going to have to do something on his own, because if it was physical kidnapping, that means that someone would have forced him to go somewhere.
Maybe he was just out with his friends.
Hmm.
That's probably what his family thought.
I'm sure his family didn't know, but I'm sure he went somewhere from like a scam.
I mean, with social media nowadays, you never know what, especially kids. I mean, 17 years old, I don't know. They can believe a lot of things. So
I'll say this is how any of those stories start.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep going. How did the family find out?
Police, working with the FBI, the U.S. Embassy in China, and Chinese officials learned of the criminal trend called cyber kidnapping when foreign exchange students, in particular those from China, are threatened and a ransom is demanded, according to Riverdale, Utah police.
Cyber kidnapping. I have never even heard of that before. So they stole more his identity? Not like physically, you know what I mean? Is it physical kidnapping? What do you mean cyber?
When you say they threatened him, does it say in more detail of what they threatened him?
Yeah, I think they're going to get into this a little bit more, but okay. It sounds like basically controlling you, like mind control in a way. Gets you to believe a story, and then they get you to do something. They're not physically taking control of you, but they're using the spoken word, I guess, to manipulate you. That's scary.
Yeah. I mean, AI, a lot of things have been happening with that. The mom thinks it's their kid, and they say they need help. So, I mean, I guess it's not crazy to think that cyber kidnapping will become a thing, sadly.
What do you think, Michelle? I mean, you create content.
I know. You need to keep reading, because I still don't understand the story of how they convinced him.
Okay, here we go. The victims are ordered to isolate themselves and are monitored via FaceTime or Skype, forced to take photos of themselves that make it appear that they are being held captive, and the photos are sent to their frightened parents.
That's terrible.
That is frightening.
Yeah.
Could the victim not message his parents, though, and say, disregard this, you know, if he was having to do it? Or what were they threatening him with? Did they get into that part of the story?
Yeah, I think okay. That's what they're doing.
I'll wait. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Though the kidnapping is conducted apparently remotely, Victims often comply out of fear that their families will be harmed, and parents are extorted for fear that the kidnappers are actually with the victim and could harm them.
Wow. Yeah, then that's scary. I'm saying, then I guess, because at first when you said cyber kidnapping, I'm like, all right, who would go in the woods and like do that? But right. If they're saying they're going to threaten your family, then I can see now why he did that.
That's quite a ruse. What would you do if you were this person and somebody started contacting you like that? I mean, how far would it have to go before you would think this is real?
Well, I would probably try and get in contact with my family that was abroad and see first, unless he was being told, don't call them. I'm not sure.
I would call the police or someone to get more information on a situation like that, because it doesn't almost seem legit to me. Like, my first instinct is, how could someone be threatening my family? And this whole, I need to send photos, it just seems, I don't know, it doesn't add up fully to me. So I would almost want to call for help and, like Michelle said, contact my family. I don't know.
Yeah.
Does it seem like this person was singled out? Like somebody knew this person, so they knew that this individual might be just slightly gullible? I don't know.
Or missing details, I think, of the story to kind of know.
I would say also, because he's a foreign exchange student, being away from his family, it is harder to contact them. So I think that makes it easier to target him, especially being with the host family. Like, he might not be as used to being in this state or country. So I think maybe that's also why he was targeted. They like to target people out of their element, which is just pretty horrible of people to do.
Okay, here we go with more of the story. Police looked in to Kai's whereabouts over the last month and found that he had been contacted by police in Provo, Utah on December 20th. Is this making sense?
Wait, sorry. The police contacted him. This was as he was in his tent in the woods, or?
We haven't got there yet. He was found trying to go camping, carrying camping gear. Provo police were concerned for his safety and returned him to Riverdale.
Wow. So he was found up in the woods by Provo police, probably.
He was preparing.
But how did Provo police already know about, like, how did they see him and be worried?
It could have been anyone maybe who was going camping. Like, was it weather reasons that they're like, no one should be camping right now?
Not sure.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, it seems like there's a few details.
Right, that are missing.
Riverdale police said they believed Kai was already being manipulated and controlled by cyber kidnappers on December 20th. But he never disclosed it to police or his host parents.
Well, that's weird in itself. How do they know that?
Something's not making sense. Are there aliens involved in this?
I bet the Provo police contacted the Riverdale police. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
I bet they contacted them.
How did Provo police know?
Well, they probably knew where he lived.
They probably said, what are you doing out here? It's winter.
So it's normal to camp in 25 degree weather.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. After Kai went missing, police weren't able to find the camping equipment he had purchased and had in Provo. An analysis of bank records and phone pings showed he had visited the Brigham City Canyon area.
Phone records? So
they were already pinging his phone. Yeah.
The scammers or the police? Or both, probably.
Police.
The police were pinging his
phone. I'm still confused how the police found out that he was kidnapped, because the host family said they didn't even notice when he was gone, right? So who called and said that he was getting manipulated or...
He could have even told the police when they found him in the mountains.
Pieces are missing or bad journalism?
I think let's get him on the podcast and he can tell his side.
It says, we believe the victim was isolating himself at the direction of cyber kidnappers in a tent. Due to the cold weather in Utah, at this time of year, we became additionally concerned for the victim's safety and that he may freeze to death overnight, according to the news release.
I wonder if the kidnappers were telling him to go in the cold, because that's something that, like you said, you could freeze to death, almost to scare his family, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but then don't you think they would know that the police would see them? If, you know, in Utah, you shouldn't camp unless you're like professional and knows how to do it in cold weather. But I feel like then that's risky for them to do, since the police could find him easier.
I still don't understand why he's going along with this.
Because they threatened his family. They said that they were going to harm them if he didn't do what they say. And yeah, I mean, why did he trust them? But it's scary, especially being 17, if someone's like, I'm going to hurt your family, and you don't listen to them, you would think it was your fault.
Wouldn't you vet that out at all?
Okay, I'm trying to think of it. Yes, I probably would, but maybe just being the age we are now. But as a 17-year-old, I don't know.
There's also stories that you're going to hear and you don't want it to be the one that happens to you. Yeah. Maybe he was scared. It's horrible and it's genius, like evil genius, you know, that they're having, the parents are seeing photos of him, you know, you need to give us money and we're going to release your kid. And the kid's taking the photos of himself because he's scared they're going to harm the parents if they don't.
Yeah. It's the same thing. The parents don't want to say, oh, it's a scam. And then God forbid something happens to him. They're going to think it's their fault.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Picture this. You are a key decision maker at your credit union. Your tellers are tired of the lengthy KYC process, fraud is a constant worry, and onboarding new members feels like a marathon. But what if there was a way to streamline it all? Enter the Sudo platform. Our reusable credential technology transforms the traditional KYC process, reduces fraud, strengthens communication security, and streamlines member onboarding. With Sudo Platform, you can prevent fraud, save time, and create secure digital identities. And the best part? It's built right into your credit union's app. This is more than innovation. It's a commitment to providing your members a rewarding experience. We're live and ready to redefine how you do business. Don't wait. Give your credit union the upgrade it deserves. Identify any member in any channel at any time, all while improving convenience and reducing fraud. To learn more, contact us at sudoplatform.com. That's sudoplatform.com.
An overnight search was conducted with the help of the Weber County Sheriff's Office search and rescue drone team searching for Kai's campsite that continued into the next day.
So they didn't find him until the next day?
I was like, that's where this is going. So Kai was found on Sunday in a wooded area by Riverdale police, who hiked on foot up the mountainside near Brigham City, according to police in a news release. A sergeant contacted the victim inside the tent and found he was alive but very cold and scared. The victim was relieved to see the police.
I guess I'm still confused on the time frame of when the police got involved, like when they talked to him at first.
Yeah, we'll have to go backtrack and take a look at that. It said he had no heat inside the tent. There was a heat blanket, a sleeping pad, limited food and water, and several phones that were presumed to be used to carry out the cyber kidnapping.
Several phones?
So did he go buy a bunch of phones? The scammers told him to go start opening up new accounts and...
It's like, is he part of this?
Or did someone meet him up there? And then it turned into a physical kidnapping?
Kai was checked out by the Brigham City Fire Department and cleared of any major medical concerns. According to police, the victim only wanted to speak to his family to ensure they were safe and requested a warm cheeseburger, both of which were accomplished on the way back to Riverdale PD.
I bet it was In-N-Out.
It says the investigation's ongoing, so it ends with saying officials are now warning the public about cyber kidnapping, saying if ever targeted to contact local police, do not send money and stop all contact with suspects.
I can see why they're saying that, but this happened to my cousin, and when he just thought it was a scam, they actually went through with the threats. So I don't know. I don't know what I would do in that situation. I feel like that's why you just have to be careful with what you put out there, and scammers are getting your information, and I guess that's all we can try to do.
Yeah, I think one of the most important pieces for me that's missing is, what's the relationship between these scammers and Kai Zhang? Did they know him? Were they going to school with him? Did they just look him up on social media and say, this is the person we're going to target?
Well, it said that there was some sort of Skype or video camera, right? So maybe they just hacked into his phone or computer and were calling him through there.
Since he was a foreign exchange student, maybe his information got leaked in some breach with a list of foreign exchange students. And so then they knew.
Yeah, it said they were targeting people in the article at the beginning.
I guess my last question was about the Skype call again. I had forgotten that that's where you were saying they were watching him to make sure he was doing what they had asked. But the phone is the weirdest part to me, how there were several phones. It doesn't fully make sense unless possibly the kidnappers had gotten him one directly and that's what they were using to communicate. I'm not fully sure.
We don't know where the kidnappers were either. So either they like left a phone at his house or they shipped it to him or...
They were describing in general, like, how does cyber kidnapping work? And it says the victims are ordered to isolate themselves and are monitored via FaceTime or Skype, forced to take photos of themselves and make it appear that they're being held captive, and the photos are sent to their frightened parents. So it's kind of generally how the scam works.
Well, then, yeah, like Michelle said, the scammers could have been in China and they knew the family. And so they knew that their child was in the U.S. as a foreign exchange student. And that's kind of how they found him in that way. So they could have shipped the phone.
Or it could be they knew the family was wealthy. You hear stories like that sometimes where you hear a wealthy family and they try to get money because they know they'll give it to him. The phone thing's interesting because I'm sure maybe one or two extra makes sense. Like they were basically recording him while he was alone in the tent to show that this was true. Even though he was recording himself, that's what the multiple phones were for, possibly. I'm not sure.
Or maybe he went out and bought a phone. They like convinced him to go buy one and record, because didn't it say he bought camping gear before?
They could have forced him.
Yep.
So he went out and bought a bunch of stuff and then took it up.
Yeah, did it say that there was, because they looked at his bank records, or how did they see that he purchased?
They looked at his bank records.
I feel like they would have seen if it was a phone too.
I still think there's a lot of information that's not maybe out yet. I mean, if this just happened, 2 days ago? I'm sure more information is going to keep coming out. So that's fascinating. But I would be curious about the number of phones. And also, what about being tracked with the phones?
So I think this does highlight this trend of, doesn't seem to be stopping, where people are creating so-called real friends online. And there's this replacement of all these digital activities now. And it's replacing your in-person communications, right? Social skills continue to decline. We see the studies about this all the time. And it makes you wonder, is this making people more vulnerable? So are more people going to be susceptible to this type of scam?
I think there's just not enough awareness, especially if he's, in high school. They're probably not even talking about scams to him and what could happen.
This is also very unique. I have never heard of a story like that where they're doing both sides, scaring the parents and scaring the child at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, I don't know, I think anything that's a new kind of scam at the beginning, people are going to fall for it. And unfortunately, once more happen and the stories become more popular, then people are going to start becoming more alert. And that's the horrible cycle, because then there's a new scam, and until it becomes big enough, that's when you kind of get warned. It's like the AI, how people will use their kids' voices and call the parents or call the family. That's the craziest one to me, because you literally could generate their voice. And of course, a parent is going to hear their kid's voice and do what they could do. And I actually saw someone who was posting about almost doing a safety word with your family, so you know if it's like a true call. I'm trying to remember where I saw it on. It was Instagram or something, but basically to have a code word with your family. So if you are on a call or it is something serious, the parent or the child could say that word, and the parent, again, or the child says it back or something, so they know if this is a true call or if it's, I'm like, that's something that's smart, I guess, with everything that's going on.
Yeah, I feel like I need to do that with my family, especially because I post a lot of stuff online. So they have several clips they could pull my voice from. Mm-hmm. Or even Rich with this podcast. I mean, he could have so many clips of
that's
his
true.
Voice.
Yeah, you never know.
They even say like sales phone calls too. They try to get you to say the word yes or things like that when you first answer the phone. Like, do you want to be taken off this mailing list? And you're like, yes. And then they have your voice saying yes. I don't know. That's just, it's crazy.
Michelle.
Yes.
You are a famous content creator.
I wouldn't say famous.
Okay.
But I have a lot of content out there.
Have you ever seen anything remotely suspicious like this as you are creating content, posting, interacting with fans, if you will?
Nothing like this. My concern is more just through email getting scammed, but I've kind of learned what to look for and what to avoid as well.
This just seems very elaborate. I'm sure more is going to come out. This is still probably very, very early in the process, but.
Yeah. I mean, as technology gets better, sadly, this is going to keep happening too. I mean, with AI coming about even more so in just the world, I think people have to be careful. And like Hisula said, I think you just have to have conversations with friends and family to kind of know what is maybe normal in your life. And so if you do get a call, email, text, message, anything, then you kind of know if it is more scam-like.
Yeah, but also, aren't people getting scammed who are looking for jobs right now too? I think I read that somewhere recently that because so many people are looking for jobs, that's another cyber scam.
Yeah.
I think that could be a full other conversation on its own, because it's so fascinating how people are, because you're applying for jobs and you put out all your information out there, then they get your information just like that.
During the COVID period, there was an increase in companies or people saying, hey, just give me a little money and I will get you connected to the right jobs. and then you wouldn't hear from them again.
I did have lots of people reach out to me as a personal assistant job is what they were calling it. And anytime I knew someone would reach out to my email with that, I was like, it's a scam. I'm not even looking remotely in that field of my career. They would always ask questions that kind of were like, okay, send me your bank account information so we can pay you.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. You're like, I'm on it right now. Here you go.
I guess this loosely falls under social engineering, right? You're manipulating somebody to do something in exchange for getting money, stealing identity, you know, all kinds of different outcomes. I mean, the end game could be a variety of things, but wow, I hope this is not the future.
Yeah. So the kidnapping part is where he actually isolated himself and his family thought he was being kidnapped for real.
It makes sense. Once I heard cyber kidnapping, I'm like, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that this story is how that would mean cyber kidnapping.
You're just hacking into someone's mind, basically.
Because the end result's pretty much the same. You're getting tormented in some way and you're getting threatened. I mean, that's pretty much kidnapping, is you can't take him to a place. Maybe he wasn't physically taken, but it's still, yeah, the end result being he was forced to go somewhere else.
They're watching him in the same exact way that a kidnapper would, whether it's through a computer or a phone. They're telling him to isolate himself and they're watching him to make sure he does it. So essentially, they're forcing him. Maybe he's moving himself, like he has the bodily control to do that, but...
Yikes.
I want to know if there was cameras on his parents at all. Like if he was being shown his parents or if he was just getting told that your parents will be harmed if you don't...
Ugh. That makes me so sad for him.
And the parents.
Of course. It's horrible.
Yeah, this is one of those things that's going to kind of probably scar you for life. You know, it's going to be hard to get over that. All right, let's do some closing thoughts. What are some lessons learned from this? What do you think? Stay off of social media, probably?
Yeah, pretty much. Just stay off the internet. Just kidding. No.
Or stay on social media and only look at scams so you're aware. Just kidding.
Great advice. You know what's crazy, too? It just reminded me of something. So I'm the resident LinkedIn expert, I guess, in this group. And I've talked to people in my network that, again, these are people I don't even really know in person, never met them. It's just connect with people because you're in the industry and whatever. And some people have literally told me that they lost thousands of dollars to other people that they loan money to on LinkedIn. And I'm like, wait a minute, tell me a little bit more. Oh, I just met him on LinkedIn and I've never seen him in person. This guy said he's lost his job, needs some money. And they're pointing these scammers out to me like I'm going to get involved in this stuff. But it's crazy to me how total strangers have replaced real in-person interaction with the digital world. Like I would never think of handing somebody $1,000 like that I didn't even know.
I mean, you see all the funding, GoFundMe or donate for this cause all over online. And you kind of feel... like you want to help or you want to participate, whether you give $5 or $10 or like you said, thousands of dollars, depending on it. But again, how do you know if it's a legit charity or act or cause or whatever it is that you're trying to donate to?
Yeah, I feel like you want to trust people because, you know, you want to think that people are trying to do good in this world, but you also want to be careful. So it is hard to kind of see which route you should take. You're like, should I trust these people? Especially since like more people are working from home and they are on the phone. So when I am talking to someone or a Zoom call or anything, I'm like, well, that's how life is nowadays. So I'm like, I don't want to be cynical and think that everyone is out to get me, I guess. So it's hard.
We've got some people in this room who went through the whole COVID lockdown period where it kind of really took away from that collegiate experience that you were hoping to have. A lot of people out there that are still, I guess, scarred from that period, that's probably contributed to making people more vulnerable as well. Just it's a lot of loneliness, of course, that occurred during that period of time. It was obviously mentally tough for all of us. And you wonder if that's played a part.
It could definitely play a part in your social interactions with people. So if someone were to request your bank account information or money or kind of a scam like that, you might be more willing to do that because you just are so used to talking to people online.
Right. And a lot of today you do give your information online for your, of course, accounts that are safe, but still, especially during COVID, the world had to learn to function online. So I think a lot of people became more comfortable with doing those things and people's trust.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Hey there, go-getters. Ready to tackle those New Year's resolutions? We know you are, and so is MySudo. MySudo isn't just about privacy. It's about organization and focus, too. With multiple pseudo profiles, you can separate your work life from your home life, your side hustle from your social connections. No more distractions, no more clutter. Just pure resolution achieving productivity. Looking to get fit? Create a fitness pseudo. Want to learn a new language?
Hola.
There's a pseudo for that. Each with its own dedicated email and browser to keep you laser focused on your goals. So let's make this the year you stick to your resolutions. Download MySudo and start living a more organized, focused life today. Here's to a productive new year. To learn more, go to MySudo.com. That's MySudo.com. Stay private.
Have any of you had any close calls where you almost went through with something and then was like, oops, or what you're willing to admit? Maddie's over there smiling.
I mean, so I'm looking for a house. I'm getting married soon. So me and my fiance are looking for a house. So yeah, we're a little desperate, especially with this housing market we're dealing with. So I got this notification on Zillow and it said that this house that looked like it was worth $1 million was being sold for $10,000. Okay, I'm not an idiot. I thought it was too good to be true right off the bat, but I am desperate to find a house. And so there was a little part of me that I was like, maybe someone's being nice and they're selling their house for less to give to someone like me. And that's what it said in the description. I mean, it said that these people were pretty well off. They like to give a house away once a year by the holidays. And I started to fall for that. And then after, you know, I talked to our real estate agent and it was a total, of course, scam and I reported it. But it did hurt because, yeah, I didn't fall for it completely because they wanted money to see the house and that was a red flag. But it's just sad because I almost did fall for it because I was desperate. So I can see why some people could fall for it if they're just in a different state of mind or what their situation is like at that time.
Right, because even just a little bit of money is worth that possibility of, what if they will give it?
Well, yeah, it's a high risk, but it's a high reward. I'm like, I'll even pay a little more and donate it to charity. Like, I was just creating this whole scenario in my head. So when I see these stories that I'm like, how did they do that? But I mean, I kind of was thinking too, because like I said, I want to think good in people. And so that's why it is hard, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, it totally goes on your emotions. Mm-hmm.
And this was $100. How much?
No, it was $10,000 for the house, but you had to pay $100. You had to Venmo them to see the house. So that was the first red flag. So I'm like, okay, this is maybe a little weird, but I just had it in my head. I was like, oh, wow, I would have $1 million house for $10,000.
But isn't this the story where they never got the 10K because you would give them $100 and you would never hear from them again?
Yeah, because I wanted to look it up to see if this has ever happened. And somewhere in Seattle, that exact thing happened, the same names, everything. And what would happen was people would pay the $100 and they would never hear from them. So thankfully, I don't think people were getting scammed out of $10,000. But it was weird in the description. It said, yeah, the title company won't work with us until after you sign the contract. Red flag number two. Because I'm like, oh, so you want me to pay and sign? I won't ever get the title of the house. So I just didn't want to believe it. But yes, there were some red flags. And that's why I think one of my preventative measures to tell people is just to dig. I guess we have the internet for a reason. Like, yeah, there's some bad things to come from it, but there's also good things. And so when I looked up that exact story, it popped up right away in an article in Seattle. So just do some digging before you make big decisions like that.
Michelle, do you have a story?
Kind of. So I have been trying to sell stuff on Facebook Marketplace, just furniture items, because we're about to move. And the first thing I see as soon as I list something is an influx of messages that are usually scams. If it's right off the bat, I know it's a scam. No one's going to contact me that quick. And the second red flag is they'll ask for my Zelle account, which I think is just another payment account. And I don't have one of those. So I just send them my Venmo, the QR code that you are supposed to share with your friends. So that's usually what I share with them is just my Venmo QR code. I'm like, here you go. You can pay me. If you want to pick it up tomorrow, let me know, whatever. As long as they pay me first, it's not a scam. But I have heard some people where they ask for money back because they're like, oh, we've sent too much money to you. Can you pay me back? Because I accidentally paid you, say it was like I was selling something for $500, they paid me $1,000. I've heard scams where they're like, will you Venmo me $500 back because I overpaid you? And that's how you get scammed that way. Other people have been asking me for it. Once I send them my Venmo, they've been asking me for my email address associated with my Venmo account. And then when I see that, I'm like, there's no reason you need my email address. I sent you all the information you need to pay me. So that's clearly a scam, but I'm not sure what they would do if I sent them the email address associated with the Venmo. I think they're just trying to log in somehow.
It is so crazy to me how people have nothing like better to do than that because they're actually making money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's just, that's so.
And Facebook Marketplace seems so common. Like I feel like everyone's probably used it at least right. once and you do, you get scammed right off the bat.
Is it turning into Craigslist?
Maybe.
I mean, there's some bad stories related to Craigslist. So yeah, don't go meet up with anybody.
What about you, Rich? Do you have a story?
I do, actually. This one goes back a little ways. And it's not necessarily digital, but I think it's an example of this whole social engineering stuff. So I won't name the company or the dealership, but gosh, probably 20 years ago, I was walking on a dealership in the lot in Texas. And this salesperson was talking to me and was, oh, you really like this vehicle? Yeah, but I don't like the configuration. There's some things missing. The color is not what I want. And maybe there's some features that are missing. I walk into the office and we start talking. And he's like, I found the vehicle. It's in a dealership somewhere else in the city. And they're going to bring the vehicle to our dealership here. And you can come test drive it. I just need you to sign this. Whoa, wait a minute. I need to sign something just so you can move a vehicle from one dealership to the next. Same company. Right? Okay, whatever. So I start reading. It's like a one-page document. At the bottom, it basically says I'm agreeing to take ownership of the vehicle.
Wow.
And this is a name brand dealership, big time dealership, big time car manufacturer.
Expose them.
Yeah, I doubt he had a long career in that profession. But the funny thing was this whole kind of playing on your emotions. I said, I can't do this. I said, I'm looking at this right here and it clearly states that I'm going to take ownership of the vehicle. You would have thought he would have said, oh, okay, no problem. I'll have that vehicle still delivered over here and I'll give you a call when it has arrived.
Mm-hmm.
No, he didn't. He gave up on it. So I knew exactly what he's doing. Absolutely, completely corrupt person. And then I'm in his office, right? And he starts talking about the kids that he has, right? He's got pictures of his children on the wall. And he's like, you know, this whole job that I do, makes it worthwhile when I go home and I see my family.
Scamming
are you
people?
Trying to lay it on thick here, buddy?
Oh,
do you
yeah.
have a family?
He was playing that whole game and he's got his wife there and he's just talking about his family. And he's
like, they must be so proud of you.
That's why he's scamming people. He needs to feed his whole family.
I was just like, I cannot believe this is not a used car dealership lot. This was a major, major, major company.
Wow. Maybe the family was fake. They were fake photos.
Yeah, AI. No, seriously.
The ones that come in the frame when you buy them at Walmart or something.
I wonder if some of the salespeople kind of sneak clauses like that in themselves to get deals.
Oh, I mean, I've heard all kinds. I mean, I was at a dealership one time and literally I'm sitting at the salesperson's desk and he's kind of making motions to the sales manager across the office. You know, just like, come on, guys. You know, really? This isn't necessary. So, but you have to be very careful. I think, again, it just underscores most people are good, but it just takes one bad person. You just have mm-hmm. to always be on alert. It's very easy to make a mistake. And I've heard lots of stories about people that do that. They sign a contract they didn't read. Big mistake. Most of us don't read all the privacy statements online.
Terms and conditions.
Yeah, who wants to do that? It's designed basically that way so you don't read it.
Well, half the time too, you can't continue on any website unless you click accept to those terms and conditions. And you're not going to read that. It's 50 million pages. They get you.
Yeah. So the lesson there is just don't go buy a car. Keep driving the same one for 50 years. See how that works for you. Any other stories?
I don't think I have any more.
Okay. I guess some tips to look for next time. Again, if we've talked about this before when it comes to social engineering, if there's a sense of urgency, slow down, stop, think about it. It's probably not as urgent as this person is leading you to believe.
I think trust your gut, too, is huge on these things. Of course, you might want to be believing it because you're scared. But I think deep down, if you take a step back, like you said, it's that urgency. Trust what you really think. And I don't know, you just have to be cautious.
Although for a lot of people, common sense is not necessarily common practice. So
true.
What might seem out of place to you, to other people, just
right.
depending on how they grew up, their frame of mind. And so that might not always work. I might think of maybe another way to look at it would be talk to some other people.
Yeah, I was going to say read articles.
do research.
And just learn from them.
Yeah, because it sounds like this is a new thing that could be on the rise.
Maybe if it sounds too good to be true, like always question it and try to find more information. Or on the other end of it, if it's something totally scary happening to you and money's involved, I would just always question where the money's going to be coming from, if it's actually practical that my parents could be harmed. Just really like thinking through scary situations or too good to be true situations.
Right. Especially, I mean, this story, it makes me wonder until we have more information of how did they even get in contact with him? What were they threatening directly? What the connections were? It's hard to judge what I would necessarily do because you would, of course, think, oh, don't do that. But when you're put in those positions, who knows?
I think another one, too, is more preventive. Back to the social media. I know we have to live our lives, but sometimes think about limiting your exposure, too, because the more people you come into contact with, especially those who are more casual acquaintances, the greater your risk for something. I think back of a story my dad told me, probably that goes all the way back to the 70s. He was a traveling sales professional for most of his career. And he was meeting with a client at a restaurant, and that client had left. And then some other person decided to start talking to him. And this guy, I'm not even going to say what he admitted to, but this person admitted to an awful crime and bragged about getting away with it. And my dad was looking at him and he's telling me the story. And he says, I wish you hadn't have told me that.
Yeah.
Because now I'm a party to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you never know. You have to be very careful who you talk to and know when to cut that off too.
Well, just maybe stop talking to strangers too. Like I don't even answer my phone because if it's someone important who wants to actually contact me, they'll leave me a message or a voicemail or they'll try reaching out to me again. Right. And I don't know, like, especially just getting a random Skype call or phone call, I would just ignore it.
Definitely. I guess stay tuned, right? I'm sure there's more details that will come out in the next week or two. So, and more true crime themed episodes coming.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. All right. Thanks, Michelle, Maddie, Chrisula.
Thanks, Rich.
And we'll see you again.
Thanks.
In the very near future. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Privacy Files, our first of 2024. In our next episode, we'll be talking to Cindy Cohen, someone who has spent more than 30 years defending free speech and fighting government surveillance. In 2018, Forbes named her one of America's top 50 women in tech. In 2013, the National Law Journal named Cindy as one of the 100 most influential lawyers in America, noting, if Big Brother is watching, he better look out for Cindy Cohen. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.